Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is The Woods.
Grr.
The show made by bears for the bear community, their admirers and supporters all around Australia and the world. Brought to you from Melbourne's Joy 94.9 studios. Woof.
Grr.
It is Thursday evening, and it is The Woods on Joy 94.9. I'm Bear Curious Dean, and I'm here tonight with Big Bear Mark. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good, Dean. Very good indeed. It's going to be an interesting show tonight, I think.
It sure is. It sure is.
Yes. We have a number of people in the studio with us. We've got a new member of the team.
A new plaything.
He's going to be our work experience cub for a while. Mm-hmm. And see what happens after that. We've got Robbie in the studio. Hey, Robbie, how you going?
Good, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. We've got to congratulate Robbie because he just got married in Thailand.
I did. Actually, I got married in Melbourne, but I honeymooned in Thailand.
Oh, very good. Very good. And welcome to the team.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you. Now, this week is, of course, Mental Health Week.
It is. In fact, World Mental Health Day is the 10th of October.
Yes, coming this Saturday. Mm-hmm. And so we thought we'd have a bit of a discussion around mental health tonight. It's something we've talked about before, but you know we're going to talk about it again because it's one of those subjects that keep coming up as part of the bear community especially.
And absolutely. I think mental health touches everybody.
It does.
It's everywhere.
It does.
And I think it's really important that we do talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, I don't know if you've been watching some of the ABC stuff during the week, which has been fantastic.
It's been very good.
But, yeah, the more we talk about this sort of stuff, the more people are aware of it and the stigma then comes of it and the whole shebang. But we've got a lovely gentleman in the studio tonight by the name of Craig Ingrey. How are you, Craig?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for coming in and sharing your story with us tonight. You have a long history with mental illness. Is that correct to say or am I...
I would say that's fair.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Certainly since the early teens.
Early teens. Now, and one of the things I've actually learnt just this week that most people that have some sort of mental illness, it does start in their teens. And it's not, that is usually the common thing, common place where it happens. What happened with you particularly?
I think it was a number of factors that sort of contributed to early onset depression and being diagnosed with what they thought was bipolar disorder at first, and they went to borderline personality disorder, certainly elements of schizophrenia as a teenager,
yeah.
Multiple personality disorders and things like that. But as I said, like there are some psychiatrists, some psychologists that say it could have started even from being, you know, 1-2 years old, and learning those sorts of coping skills from a very early age.
Now, you mentioned a few things there. You mentioned schizophrenia and bipolar. Both I know a little bit about. Borderline
personality disorder.
Can you explain that a little bit for us?
Basically, borderline personality disorder could mean a number of things depending on the individual who's been diagnosed with it. I've had people, psychologists, who say there's no such thing as borderline personality, that we're all a little bit borderline in some capacity. But it's generally somebody who can't really think dialectically. It's either one extreme or the other. It's either something's totally fabulous or something's really, you know, terrible. And it's really hard to find that shade of grey in the middle. So you generally go from moments of being, you know, very happy, really content, really excited, really, you know, out there and wanting to create beauty in the world, to basically, you know, spending your time cutting yourself and causing a lot of self-harm, particularly in your sort of teens through your 20s. And a part of borderline personality too is picking up on other people's personalities. So when you are in groups of people, the larger the group, the more complex it becomes, because you tend to sort of take on people, sometimes even their own inflections. They're if I'm talking to an English person, I might pick up an English accent all of a sudden.
I do that too.
Yeah, people do it
all the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's something that is treatable, absolutely, through things like mindfulness, especially, is a really good tool for something like borderline personality sufferers.
Can I ask you, how did this actually manifest in your life? What were the signs that showed people that there was something going on?
I think it was definitely the mood swings, you know, and inability to cope with things that other people would generally find quite easy, you know, the day-to-day school life, for example. Most in our community have suffered some form of bullying. I went through really systemic bullying at a really disadvantaged school in Sydney's southwest. Being a young, pretty flamboyant gay boy wasn't really the place to be in those sorts of environments. And so, you know, dealing with that and dealing with those sort of complex family issues around maybe not so much accepting the homosexual you know, son or nephew, you know, so there was sort of, you know, you're in this sort of constant state of trying to prove yourself to people all the time, and you're losing that sort of coping strategy because you haven't got that sort of strong network of friends to sort of fall back on. You become a bit isolated and a bit of a loner. And, you know, I was lucky. I found the creative arts as my sort of saving grace. But certainly doctors were picking up on the self-harm particularly.
Yeah, and I know what you're talking about. I mean, I grew up in Gosford, which is up above Sydney. I used to call it Mount Druitt by the Sea. And, yeah, you do. I mean, growing up gay in, I mean, I was at high school in the 80s, and it was difficult because if you came out, that was you couldn't really come out in that sort of high school environment in one of the tougher schools, because it was a signal for to get picked on and just be ridiculed, and life could become hell.
Absolutely.
Very difficult indeed.
Yeah. I actually don't recall actually ever coming out myself. I mean,
no.
I have to say, I think, you know, from about the age of 5, I was being called a queer. I wanted to work out what that was, you know, and you have no idea. You just know that you're different to everybody else. You're different to your peers. You're different to your school friends. You're different to your family.
Absolutely. So we touched on before how mental health has become part of the national conversation, how there's been some fabulous work done by the Beyond Blue organisation, the Black Dog Institute, some others as well. So back when you were a teenager, you're having these disturbed thoughts. What was the conversation then? Was there an awareness of mental health as a condition? Was it something that you could speak of with your teachers, for example?
I was certainly lucky to have a couple of really good counsellors and teachers that were really supportive. You know, I had a really supportive music teacher, a really supportive art teacher, a really supportive school nurse, and one of the counsellors as well. So I had that sort of network. I think I was sort of quite mature, you know, beyond my sort of years as well.
Yes.
When I say I didn't sort of really come out, I was pretty openly queer from the beginning of high school, certainly. And I sort of embraced that, and I figured, well, you know, I could sort of bounce back the insults because I just accepted it, you know. But there wasn't any sort of national dialogue that I can recall, sort of real the support networks that community have these days were certainly not there in the early 80s.
Absolutely. Now, we are on the Woods on Joy 94.9. If you do have a question for Craig or a comment about mental health, you could SMS us on 0427 Joy 949. Alternatively, you could send us an email onair@joy.org.au. Stick around. We'll be saying some more about this conversation next.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9. And if I can make it to the middle of this time.
I grow.
Hey, this is Matt Albert from San Francisco.
Well, then you can find a way to make it out here too.
You're listening to The Woods on Joy 94.9.
And if I can make it to the middle of this tightrope.
You're on The Woods on Joy 94.9. We've had a couple of messages in, guys. Just want to say hi to Clayton, who was just on Stand Up Straight a couple of hours ago. He just wanted to say, awesome song. That would be the Beyonce, Crazy in Love. And you were saying, Craig, that that was your favourite Beyonce as well.
It would have to be one of my favourite Beyonce's, absolutely.
You might. Some of the songs we do are going to play tonight, you might have a bit of a theme to them.
I actually did ask Dean if you thought
playing something with the word crazy in the title was okay, and he said yes.
We think it's okay.
And we also had a message from Hannah. Hey, Hannah. She said, I did Taste of Radio with Robbie. What a champion. He and Dave are such a gorgeous couple, and I want to wish them lots and lots of married love. So there you go, Robbie.
Thank you, Hannah. What a legend.
She is indeed. Yeah,
Robbie's crazy in love as well.
I know. He is. Oh, there you go. But we're talking, of course, with Craig Ingrey tonight about mental health. Because it is Mental Health Week, and World Mental Health Day is on Saturday. So we're talking about you being at high school and how it came about. But what sort of coping mechanisms sort of did you form to handle this? And because it couldn't have been easy dealing with this as a teenager.
Yeah, it was certainly difficult with the depression and those sorts of abandonment issues that you sort of have and the disassociation. For me, as I said, I touched on earlier, once I sort of discovered the creative arts and theatre and drama, I certainly became the drama queen par excellence, I think. I really started getting out there pretty early and, you know, at 13, 14, getting involved with sort of events and creative industries. And certainly by 14, 15, I was up in Sydney trying to work out what this Oxford Street was all about and what the wall
you
was all about.
You were saying something a bit before about the girls, was it?
Yeah. I used to hang around with the Les Girls troupe, and that was certainly a time where I picked up on sort of, you know, some costume making skills, which were fabulous.
Always come in handy.
Absolutely.
You know,
always. Well, you know, I ended up going off to university and spending many years studying costume design and fine arts and theatre production. Mm-hmm. And certainly by 14, 15, that was my outlet, you know, when there's such ugliness. With the bullying and the issues you face at school, you know, you needed to sort of balance that out. You know, and I think that sort of was probably my saving grace. You know, I think if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't be here today, because there was certainly lots of suicidal thoughts at that sort of 12, 13, 14, trying to come out and working out what it's all about.
So the Oxford Street scene was a bit of a release from the would it be tedium? Is that the right or correct word or not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, trying to get out, working out, you know, am I the only one like this on the planet? And, and realizing, oh my God, there's a whole bunch of freaks out there and they're just beautiful and I really want to be a part of this.
Yeah, it was like I hit the Oxford Street scene probably a little bit later in the 90s. I hit the street and it was, it is a very colourful world, the Oxford Street back then especially.
Absolutely, like that sort of period when I started getting out there, like about 84, 85, and, you know, I was 15, but got off to the Exchange Hotel, and that was the day, the height of the Golden Mile. It was also the onset of the HIV crisis as well. So there were the best of times and the worst of times. And, you know, so the being able to go from club to club to club to club to club and being involved with such interesting, creative, vibrant people was a real break to the tedium of that scourge of terminal conformity that you get at school, which just didn't fit with me. And so I would be, you know, really depressed by day at school and then go out at night and be living it up.
And what, you were like 15
about
at the time?
About 15 at the time. Yeah. But, you know, you get into some bad habits, you know.
I was just about to ask you about that, actually. Because my thought, of course, with the scene is, especially in Sydney in the 90s, I think when I was in the scene, things like alcohol, drugs, prevalent, and especially with mental health issues, not good combination. Usually.
Not a good combination at all. I mean, you know, you are drinking and you're drinking a lot. You're certainly experimenting with the drugs. And, you know, in the 80s, it was all about ecstasy and some to some point acid. So there was lots of drug taking, you know, and I did find myself, you know, out there doing sex work at a very early age, like say 14, 15 sort of period is when I sort of started working in the sex work industry. And that went on for quite a number of years as well. But it was all part of that, you know, big joyous learning curve. And I never sort of really regretted it. It probably wasn't until about my 30s I started reflecting on some of that stuff, and that led to some really bad times.
So in terms of reflecting on those times in your 30s, why was it bad? Was it regret, or what was the
I think it's just memories. You know, I started a blog called Bed Knobs and Backrooms, and it detailed that period of the Golden Mile and the period of losing so many really fabulous stars of Oxford Street. And, you know, so many deaths. And, you know, so it was a real challenge at the time. But I think as the older you get, you sort of lose those sort of coping skills. You're not young. You can't just keep swallowing booze. You can't keep popping pills. You can do that in your 20s and your 30s and whatnot. But certainly by the 40s, you start sort of, you know, realizing I can't do this anymore. I can't keep up the facade.
Oh, great. Definitely. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I mean, as you said, I mean, for me, it was more probably the 90s, but the 90s for me was, it was, you know, that Mardi Gras, sleazeball, Inquisition type scene that you got into, and it was a distraction, and it took you away from your normal 9-to-5 life. But I look back on it now and think how destructive it actually was on me and on my mental health as well, because I mean I'm got diagnosed as being clinically depressed, but I was in my late 30s when that, or no, mid 40s actually, before that actually came up. But I look back and said, well, you know, did all those Mardi Gras have some sort of effect on that? And that is, am I paying the price now for what I did in the 90s? So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got to a point in my life now, I'm, what, 47, where I think I've sort of been fortunate to actually no longer blame anything for it. It's just a state of your human condition, and not really have any regrets, because you can't spend your day saying, I wish I'd done something else, or you should never have done that, because it really did enrich me and gave me a lot of knowledge. And, you know, there's nothing I really regret about the times. Maybe a little bit sort of certainly through the 30s when I was probably a little bit screwed up and making some really poor choices and probably treating people a little poorly as well. And I will certainly own that, you know, during my 30s, you know, but at the same time created some really interesting culture as well, you know, getting involved with some really great organisations like the Sex Workers Outreach Project in 2010 and the Gender Centre and Pride, and helping to develop Sydney Leather Pride, for example, and running the Inquisition parties and working for Mardi Gras and working for the Sydney Star Observer. And I really sort of spent most of my energy and time trying to create safe spaces and raising revenue for people who were going through what I went through without that support when I was 14 or 15 and helping those street
I'm really
kids.
Struck as you list off some of the achievements you've had in your life. Just it sounds to me that you were very highly functioning, even with a mental health condition, and even with that party boy period of your life, you were still able to perform quite highly and actually be quite driven.
Absolutely.
And creative.
I think it's a bit of a misnomer where people think that because you suffer or live with mental health issues that you're somehow incapable of actually producing good stuff. It's quite the opposite. Some of the greatest artists of our time were depressives, and Van Gogh. I mean, you know, I could, you know, that rattle off a number of musicians people, particularly in the theatre, but they're generally the most creative and the most passionate, feel things the most deeply.
Yes.
I've never tried to use my issues around mental health to ever, you know, get in the way of producing good stuff and trying to achieve things and create good things.
Absolutely. So in your 20s, when you were going through that partying period, were you also getting treatment for your mental health issues then, or was this self-medication, and I use that term loosely?
No, during the 20s, certainly through university, early 20s, I was in a relationship with a partner who I was very close to who died of cancer, and that sort of really kick-started. I was 26 at the time, I think he was 33, and that was the sort of launch of my fabulous career with alcoholism and turning to alcohol, particularly as a coping mechanism. And I think that was a period, and this was going into the 90s where it was all about sort of sitting on a bar stool at the Oxford or the Flinders or the Midnight Shift or the Phoenix or wherever and using alcohol and crystal meth or whatever it was to sort of just keep you going. That sort of stuff I probably, in hindsight, wish I had a better support network.
Yes.
Or was able to sort of cope a little bit better. But grief is grief and we all feel things differently. But certainly I was actively seeking help through medication for depression and started working with some really good therapists on things like cognitive behavioural therapies and the mindfulness, which was a godsend, and just talk therapy, being able to talk to really open-minded, carefully constructed conversations with really good psychologists.
In a therapeutic relationship, exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the mindfulness a couple of times now. Can you expand what that actually is? Because I'm not aware of it.
Okay, mindfulness. It's become a bit of a buzz term these days. In fact, a lot of people are talking about mindfulness. I sort of started using mindfulness shortly after David's death. It's basically just a way of stilling the mind, and it's really great, a really great vehicle, particularly with anxiety disorders, to stop you thinking about what's going to happen next, and to help with depression disorders, which are usually about thinking about what's happened.
Yeah.
It brings you to right here and now. If I was finding myself in a situation like with you guys sitting here around the table and finding myself suddenly getting anxious, mindfulness would be something as simple as placing my hand on the table and getting a sense of the texture of the table and how it's feeling in my hand and the temperature in the room, what I can hear in the room, what I can sort of see around me, and bringing everything centered and now. And it's really important to sort of stay present and focused and not get too bogged down in the minutiae of what's flicking around in your mind, which is either, as I said, is either thinking about the past or worrying about the future. For me, the past is depression. The future is anxiety, because once you can sort of just stop and focus on the present, that's mindfulness. It's a form of meditation to some extent. Meditation is probably one of the most effective tools to cope with anxiety and depression. Yoga is brilliant as well. But mindfulness can be practiced at any time by anyone, walking down the street, sitting on a tram, sitting in your office.
It's very portable. Just
absolutely.
Awareness of breath, awareness of the moment, being in the moment.
It's
beauty in the moment. And we only have this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if you create a really good moment now, it creates a happy memory for tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And right at this moment, we need to listen to some sponsorship. But if you are interested in getting involved in the conversation tonight, please SMS us on 0427JOY949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au. This is The Woods on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
In a forest, not too far from here, the tiny woodland creatures awake. They are thirsty. They are in need of the April showers. And only one man can bring it to them. The Big Dipper!
What's up? this is Big Dipper, and you're listening to The Woods with Big Bear Mark and Luke the Wonder Cub.
Drip, drip, drop, little April showers me the Big Dipper, me now fuck around. Drip, drip, drop goes the baseline, power club music is a Big Dipper sound. Big Dipper sound.
You are on The Woods on Joy 94.9. I'm Bear Curious Dean. I'm here with Big Bear Mark and Robbie. Robbie, he's our cubby.
He is. He's a work experience cub.
Work experience cub.
I love that I've been labelled the cub straight away. That's exactly where I'd want to be. Thank you.
Oh, good.
Thank you, boys.
We're all about labels.
Oh, look, the bear community. I mean, Craig, you'd know about labels in the bear community. God, everyone's got a label these days.
Absolutely. The only label I wear these days, it says drip dry.
That has lots of connotations. We won't go there.
Now, we are talking mental health this evening.
Yes, we are.
Hearing from Craig about his experience growing up and more recently with the mental health condition. But if you are listening and you are needing support, you can go to the World Mental Health Day website, which is 1010.org.au. And they have a number of resources and supports that you can access from the community on that website. Or you could always call Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36. Of course, there's always Lifeline on 13, 11, 14, or, of course, the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard with 9663-2939. Now, Robbie, you had a question.
Yeah, Craig, you were talking before that fabulous Madonna break we just had. You were talking about mindfulness, which is something that I'm really interested in, the concept of you know, being aware, being in the moment. Is that something that you would practice every day?
Absolutely, yeah. Ever since I sort of worked out what mindfulness was, it's something that I've sort of made a bit of a, God, I hate this term, lifestyle choice. But it's something that I certainly have made a big part of my day, and it extends into whether it's, you know, spending time with my dog Maggie, who is my, you know, love and joy, or whether it's gardening or even just doing the housework, you know. Mindfulness has certainly given me some great skills for coping in really stressful situations. I'm usually working in a career which is really stressful. For example, the last couple of years working in politics with the Victorian Greens, which I adore, but again, working in some seriously, you know, combative environments sometimes can, you know, make you a bit jittery. So yeah, mindfulness is something that I would recommend everyone sort of, you know, get involved in. And you know, there are so many different levels to mindfulness that you can sort of, you know, practice and explore.
Who knew housework could be therapeutic?
Absolutely. Gosh, you know, any time I'm doing the housework, Reese comes in, my partner, and says, what are you stressed about? What's going on? But, you know, whatever's cathartic, you know.
My partner comes, if I'm doing the housework, he says, what have you done wrong? It's like that.
I think it's just about doing things with purpose as well. And thinking about what you're doing, not just sort of glibly walking around with your duster, you know, make something of it. And, you know, those sort of moments of quiet reflection are really important. And, you know, I will whack on some Madonna like we just heard. And
yeah, and we played that just for you, Borderline. You got it?
I know,
it? Yeah.
I know, yeah.
It's
a theme.
It's a bit of a theme, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other things we touched on before, and it's something I want to talk about, is triggers. Obviously, we talked about the death of your previous partner and grief. I know in my life, grief is something that does trigger, you know, depression myself. Did you find the same, or do you know what your triggers are?
Oh, gosh, there are so many triggers, but it's really important to actually stop and think if you are going through a period of sadness, to quantify whether it's actually just, you know, you're having a bit of a blue moment, or whether in fact it's depression, and working out what's actually triggered this. Sometimes it's absolutely nothing. It's just, you know, an onset of melancholia. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I go through a period of sadness, and some days I can be feeling sad, well, some days it could last for 3 months, like a recent bout, where you just feel like you're about to cry every moment.
Yeah.
And it sort of, you know, it did end my career in politics in the end, because I was thinking, no, this is just, you know, it's not a happy place for me. I need to be back in a slightly more creative and vibrant sort of environment. Grief is certainly a trigger to depression, that there's no denying that. The loss of someone who is your companion, whether it's your life partner or your best friend, or a colleague from work or just a mate from the pub or someone that you've probably never even met but has made some sort of impact on your life, yeah. Just through your own social circles. You know, it questions your own, you question your own mortality. And certainly we know it within the bear community. We know it within the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer community, that suicide is a major problem. And, you know, in the last, say, 6 years, I've lost probably around one person a year to suicide. And every year it just seems to be bang, bang. And it's been ongoing. And, you know, and if it's not a friend of mine, then it's somebody else I've heard of, or it's somebody that's talking to me who's contemplating it. And certainly suicidal thoughts is something that's with me daily. And it's something that I work with my therapist pretty strongly with. Mm. You know, when those sort of triggers sort of hit where you know, you just want to, you know, take your life, you've actually got to take stock and maybe practice some mindfulness to pull yourself out of that rut of, like, why are you thinking this? Another term for triggers is called schemas. Mm. And trying to identify what your schemas are. And your schemas can go way back into childhood. And certainly there were many years or the past decades where I would blame my mood for something that happened in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s or when I was a baby or what my mother said to me that day after school or what that kid did to me in the classroom that day. And you've actually got to sort of, I think, stop blaming all that stuff, you know, yeah. Because, you know, the horrible term shit happens, but shit does happen, and it happens to all of us. The sooner you let that stuff go as something that's just happened, I think the happier you will be. And just sort of take ownership of your physical health and your mental health and your friendships and your networks, and making sure that it's right for you. There's a great line around where, you know, before you're diagnosing yourself with depression, make sure you're just not surrounded by a bunch of arseholes. And
yeah,
quite often in the community, you can find yourself in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just touch on your... You mentioned the support that you have, and you also mentioned earlier that you did have with the party boy elements. Now, what's your current regime? Is there a therapist involved? Is there medication? Is there alcohol still, or is that out of the equation now?
Yeah. No. I haven't had alcohol for nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was it almost killed me. So I've been sort of I've been fortunate to have stopped drinking and recognised that was a major issue, and alcoholism's, you know, is hereditary in my family, and, you know, just happened to knock me as well. Mm. I used to take lots of medications, you know, whether it was citalopram, cipramil, Prestique, whatever was sort of new on the market that the doctors wanted to throw at me.
Prescribed by your practitioner.
So, you know, but it got to a point for me where they weren't really working. Mm. A lot of them can have problems or have side effects, like the inability to ejaculate, for example. Cipramil is renowned for that. And, you know, you might go for a couple of years without achieving orgasm. And that's pretty depressing. Mm. And so, you know, you sort of think, okay, well, this isn't working for me. What does? And for me, the best therapy is just talking to somebody who is open-minded, who's non-judgmental, who's just, you know, there to hear you out. And I find working with a psychologist, as I do every week I go, and I have for a while now, I find for me, and I keep saying for me because it's not for everybody, but for me, that sort of, you know, conversation, occasional therapy with that psychologist, but quite often it's just dialogue. It's just sort of, am I okay to be thinking about this? Yeah. And I've been having some really good breakthroughs with this current psychologist I have, because I just find him, and you've got to have that connection with your health professional, whether it's your GP or your mental health practitioner. If there's no connection there, then move on. Find somebody who's going to work with you and is on your side and gets you. Because if you haven't got that feeling of trust, and if you haven't got that feeling of camaraderie, you really do need to consider your options. You've got to be able to just put everything on the table and be really frank.
Yeah, there's no shame in saying this person isn't working for me. I had that exact situation when I moved to Melbourne. I found a psychologist from my doctor, my GP, and it was like, no, that person's not going to work for me. And actually, it was someone else. Joy, I think, recommended someone else, and I went and saw him. He was amazing. And it was like, yeah, okay, this he's great. I can stick with him for a while. But yeah, you've got to take control of that as well at times. And if you think something's happened, and you're saying that, you know, drugs aren't working for you, but for a lot of people, drugs are a lifeline.
Absolutely.
I find, you know, I can live with my depression, normal life, no problems whatsoever, as long as I have my Prestique every day. You know, I'm fine. Soon as I come off of that tablet, that's when everything makes me cry. Everything, that's when I know, and I know it's a chemical reaction. You know, and, you know, people, a lot of things aren't necessarily just behavioral. It is, I believe myself, that it is a chemical reaction that is happening within me that makes me feel depressed.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are all sorts of physical symptoms that sort of, you know, require combating with medication. And you know, I started on medications when I was about 12. I took medication from 12 until about the age of 43, I would think. You know, so that's a long period. But it just got to the point for me where I've just got to try and tackle this. Okay, what's causing these problems? And the problems of coming off to medications too are pretty significant.
Absolutely. So just again, you're not alone. If you are experiencing symptoms of depression or anxiety or a mental health condition, you can contact Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36 or Lifeline on 13 11 14. You're not alone. You're here on The Woods on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are on The Woods on Joy 94.9, and thanks to Robbie for reading the live read. We interrupted the
interview. Very well done.
Very well done. Just quickly, on the Northside Bazaar, come along. Come and see me. I'll be running the leather and treasure area on the day. So come and have say hello and maybe buy some pre-loved leather. And we've got a few. I actually had a look through the rack the other day, and we've got some really good stuff, I have to say. And we've got a whole array of goods, not only leather. We've got some homewares and some pre-loved records and stuff like that as well. It's going to be a good one.
It's a great day.
And and the auction items they've got this year are simply amazing. There's a double pass to Madonna, VIP pass.
Oh, wow.
So it's not like nosebleeds. They're right up the front. And there's a whole array. Specsavers are giving us, Mooney Ponds are giving us two pairs of glasses for, like, any glasses you want in the shop. You can go the highest.
I want that one.
That one.
And that one.
In fact, I was just there today and they said something about, they were getting a really good range in. I can't forget what. I'll tell you later.
Okay.
But anyway, Northside Bazaar this Saturday. Be there. Anyway, we're talking about mental health with Craig. And
because it's World Mental Health Day on Saturday the 10th.
Oh, on the day that Northside Bazaar is on.
Exactly.
And where did we leave it?
We were talking about the importance of having somebody in your life who could support
that's
you.
That's right.
So you've had a psychologist. And finding the right one is important.
And I just want one little point as well. If we've been mentioning Beyond Blue and Switchboard and Lifeline.
And there are others.
The avenue that I went through is your local GP. I can't stress this enough. Go and see your local GP. You can go and see a psychologist under, there's a scheme. You get, I think it's 10 visits per year.
It's 10 visits per year.
Per year.
Yep.
And it works out great. I mean, I think it works out for me. It was like $20 a visit or something. It was really cheap. So it's worth it.
It's not a barrier. If you don't, you don't have the readies,
reach out.
We'll work it out.
Yeah, they'll work it out for you. And my GP couldn't have done enough for me. So
great.
It was really good.
Yeah, mental health plans are really something really fantastic that all GPs can sort of, you know, sit down and work with you on. There'll be a series of questions they ask you, and they'll generally put you in touch. If you haven't got somebody that you've already identified that you want to meet with, the GP will sort of certainly send somebody on, send you on to it. But yeah, they're 10 times a year, and for the calendar year. And I think it works out, yeah, about $30 or something a visit.
It's really, it's quite cheap. Depending on who you go, there is a bit of a gap. You go back to Medicare and they'll give you a refund. But you work it out with your GP and your psychologist or whoever it is. One thing I do want to ask you about is, Craig, is stigma around mental illness. Now, I think obviously weeks like this go a long way to address the stigma that's evolved. Have you ever come across any stigma attached to your mental illness?
Look, not in recent times. I think when it was less discussed, you were generally just seen as weak or a drama queen, you know, during the sort of late 80s and through the 90s. I think the more we've grown as a civilization, the more we've come to be able to identify issues, and the more we talk about it, there's probably less stigma.
Yeah.
I think there is certainly stigma in the workplace or some workplaces still, and I think that's probably where you're going to encounter it the most. And there could even be a little bit in the community as well, unfortunately. I mean, you know, you've got to have a really good, strong support work network around you, I think. But for me, I've just sort of knocked that one on the head and have always been very, very open about mental health. Mm. And I talk about it often on Facebook, for example, because I think it's a really good outlet. Sometimes I will put something quite, you know, melodramatic on a post and say, this is how I'm feeling today, and it's really crappy. And just having that little bit of support from friends saying, yeah, you know, I'm feeling the same sort of way.
It's kind of funny. The first time I ever, or the only time I've ever had any sort of stigma attached to mental illness, when I first got diagnosed with depression, and I was working for Queensland Health at the time, and my boss was she was a nurse, but she was doing a different role in the technical area. And I told her that I had been diagnosed with depression. And it was like a couple of days later, she turned around to someone else and it was like, and I could hear her, and she said something like, I just want to tell him to toughen up, princess.
Hmm.
And I was like, that was, and I soon left Queensland Health after that. But it was like, that is, and that was from a nurse in a health organisation. And so, you know, the stigma is real, and, you know, people do have this bizarre concept that you can't, I don't know if they can think you can't function or you can't do your work. You mean, yeah, sometimes I might have had to take a day off because I wasn't coping, but, you know, it was real.
It's very real. And there is that issue where you sort of feel guilty for even just leaving work early.
Oh, yeah.
Or not even early, on time, you know, which is a pretty rare occurrence for most people these days. And it's just part of looking after yourself, like, you know. But I've been sort of fortunate in that most of the sort of career I've had in the arts and the theatre and in politics even, people have been pretty open-minded and sensitive to those issues and look out for each other and pick up on other people's issues as well and make sure that we're all there supporting each other. But it is there and it's an unfortunate thing, and you do hear those lines like you mentioned, or just suck it up, or man up, or get over it, you'll be fine. You'll be fine is probably the worst thing you can say.
Yeah.
You know, get me a shovel. It's you know, that there are just so many things that people who don't suffer any mental health problem just simply don't understand it. But I think people are slowly trying to help each other out.
And I think the other one, people say in jest, you know, you just need a bit of retail therapy. Like, that does not actually help. Buying a new hat does not make me,
I don't know.
Well, it helps. Maybe in your situation.
But it was like when I told my mother, I said, oh, look, I'm got depression, and she actually said, but you're not depressed. And I was like, how'd you know? But anyway,
if validated and supported, it might have been a different response.
So the baby boomers don't really get it as much, because they really did have to tough it out, you know, back in the day. And so when they see their kids going through the issues, they don't quite understand it. And because they were sort of brought up to tough it out. And we're sort of in a fortunate period in time where it's sort of okay not to be okay.
Thank you very much, Craig. We are on the Woods. We'll be back to say goodbye in a second.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Catch up or relive all the Woods has to offer. Listen to the Woods podcast online at joy.org.au or on iTunes or Stitcher. Joy 94.9.
Oh, 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 clap your hands, clap your hands.
You're on the Woods. It's time to say goodbye. It's been a very quick hour, Craig, I have to say. Thank you very much for coming and sharing your story in Mental Health Week this week. And, you know, as I said before at the start of the show, I think by getting your stories like yours out there, it will shed a light that anyone can be affected. And it's not, what's the word I'm saying? People have to realise that this stuff is real and it's not something you make up in your head.
Yeah, absolutely. No, well, thanks. It's been a real pleasure being here. I'm really chuffed and honoured for giving the opportunity. I mean, I've sort of touched on little bits and pieces, and you know, all I want to sort of probably say to the community is really just to go easy on yourselves as individual and go easy on each other. You know, I think it's really important. We're a small community, and you know, it's dark days out there, and we've got to just look out for each other. Really, really important.
Absolutely.
Well said. Thank you very much for coming in tonight. I also want to say thank you to Robbie for coming in, Work Experience Cub. First night. How did you go, Robbie? All right?
Good. Yeah. Thank you for not listening to me when I said don't put me on air. I really
We totally ignored that.
Throw me right in the deep end. I've had a good time.
That's how we roll.
We're going over time a little bit. Quickly, 6:30 a.m. on Monday, Luke and I are back with Brekkie Bears. Should be a fun show this week because we had last week off. And Dean, you're coming up right now.
I'm coming up right now on the cheap seats. And we'll see you at the Northside Bazaar on Saturday.
Woofgar.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.